time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Half of this podcast comes from the Daily Mail. We are the Lene Kukua of podcasts.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
I was not catfish. I wouldn't call it that. I definitely had an online girlfriend.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Quoting an anonymous source who says they're 80% sure of something defamatory as hell? No, don't do that.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I welcome the pod, and we are going to get to some football talk. It's week zero, the hero. But first, we want to get to the Netflix documentary, Untold, The Girlfriend Who Didn't Exist. It's like a Lifetime music movie.
It is.
A.K.A. the Manti Te'o story.
We all like worked through this particular Lifetime story. It was as weird as it gets.
It was weird in every single way. It stars Manti Te'o, former Notre Dame All-American linebacker. Renaya Tuiasosopo, who was at the time identified as a man, now identifies as a transgender woman. That was a twist in the movie. Renaya created Lene Kukua, cobbling together fake or basically stolen photos of a pretty girl he knew, and then played the role of Lene to catfish and basically draw in all sorts of guys. There was a lot of guys that got drawn in. Just Manti was the most famous, including using a female voice to play the role of Lene Kukua. And an elaborate scam that overcame was a big play in the 2012 college football season, one decade ago, when Tuiasosopo told seeking a way kind of out of this life he was living with Lene Kukua, said Lene Kukua died due to leukemia after coming out of a coma for a car accident. And Manti Te'o dedicated his season to her and to his grandmother, who died in the same day. It's a very dramatic story, and went on to have this incredible season, including leading Notre Dame, an above average, but not a great Notre Dame team, to a 12-0 season and a spot in the national title game. And then, of course, it all blows up. Renaya basically reemerges as Lene Kukua, back from the dead. I think he told the... You've seen the movie. I'm trying to plot this movie.
I know, but as you're going through this, it's like it gets more ridiculous.
Yeah, you're sounding like you're making it up. This can't be real.
Yeah, this is not real. That's the thing. He told
them. In fact,
this is not in the doc, but I remember from reporting it, he told the Manti that Lene Kukua had gotten into some hot water with drug dealers in California and had to fake her death or she was going to get killed. Like, that was the excuse. And then she was back. Anyway, Manti was very, very confused, basically told Notre Dame about this whole weird situation. They uncovered that it was a scam. At the same time, Deadspin, among other organizations, were looking into it as this had started to filter away. Deadspin broke the story in January 2013. And as Manti was preparing for the NFL draft, all hell broke loose. Manti Te'o became a punchline and really the subject of incredible, intense online bullying. I'll be the first to say, I'm sure I cracked some jokes and laughed myself privately about this. There are parts of the story that quite honestly are humorous, but the overall bit of what it did to Manti Te'o was terrible. Lost his confidence. He's the victim of a very elaborate hoax from this guy. So I don't know if I filled that in, but 10 years later, here's the story, and Manti's really laying it out for the first time in this Untold segment on Netflix. And as you said, we all covered it. I think most people listening to this remember the story, remember that season. It was easily one of the most bizarre things to come down the pipe in college football. And if you know anything about college football, that's saying something.
There's always something bizarre coming down.
There's always something bizarre, but the fake dead girlfriend is a new one and hopefully never to return. So Pat watched, Ross has watched, we've all watched. I'll just let you say general thoughts here. Ross, why don't we start with you? You watched it before Pat, so you get to go first.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It was, it's been long enough, what, 10 years, right? Yeah, around 10 years or so, 10 to 12 years, where I'd just kind of forgotten a lot of the details. So it was always cool to kind of be reminded of some of this stuff. And, as a journalist, and I think all of us maybe thought this way too, the most interesting parts were, to me, were like kind of how Deadspin handled the story, how they got the tip, the email, the process they went through. You know, if you guys remember, I mean, the Deadspin story, well, I think it included some lines in there that suggested that Manti was in on this. And if I do recall, that ESPN pulled out a couple of those lines and ran them across the ticker about how basically suggesting he was involved. And funny how they never mentioned that in the documentary. Hey, that was just kind of completely left out. So that
let me bring that up as a point. Absolutely. Deadspin wrote, quote, a friend of Renaya Tuiasosopo told us he was, quote, 80% sure, end quote, that Manti Te'o was, quote, in on it. And the two perpetrated Lene Kukua's death with publicity in mind. So he's 80% sure not only that Manti was in on it, but he's 80% sure of the motive. And it went on to cite, quote, this one's incredible, another relative of Renaya's who, quote, believed Te'o had to know the truth, end quote. That's straight opinion. But
right, they're just
those
assuming.
Two lines, this story must have had 20 million readers. I mean, this thing had to have been an absolute monster. The way the story was framed is Manti not only knew about it, was in on it, for 80, he cannot run anything that says 80, I'm 80% sure, except the weather report. But the motive of publicity, that framed everything in this story. Because not only was Manti part of the fraud, he was trying to gain from the fraud by tricking people. And that is a powerful bit that turns the public against you. Go ahead, Ross. Sorry. Just wanted to make sure we had the wording.
Yeah, that was my big observation, is that they left out a very important note in the story.
I don't
story.
Know how that got left out.
Yeah, yeah. And because they interviewed both guys who worked on the story. And obviously, they did a great job tracking down things and all that. But yeah, that was that story probably needed an editor to comb over a couple of those sentences.
A couple of things. First off, like broad strokes, it's an incredibly compelling documentary for, I think, one big reason. You got the catfisher and the catfishee to open up completely, okay? You got both Manti Te'o and you got Renaya Tuiasosopo to lay it all out there. And so when you're writing a story or you're producing something like that, if you get the two main characters to give you everything, basically, then you're off to a very good start right there. And they were very human. You know, Te'o is in tears at the end of the thing and goes on a very impassioned kind of speech about kind of everything he went through and how he's trying to come out of it. And then Tuiasosopo sits there and says, yeah, I've changed genders, and this is everything that went into that, and here's who I am now. And I mean, it's like, wow, okay. So, yeah, there was also some things that were very much glossed over in, I think, the simplification of this, the narrative. And that's a very big one that Ross brought up and that Dan just amplified on, is there was some wildly irresponsible parts of the Deadspin story. It was a huge scoop, and credit to them for getting it. And I would like to know who initially gave him the tip. Where did that, I mean, you know, Deadspin's not going to say, none of us are going to give away that source. That's not what we do. But I was intensely curious about where they got the initial tip. But anyway, beyond that, quoting an anonymous source who says they're 80% sure of something defamatory as hell? Whoa. No, don't do that.
That's the first red flag. There's 20% there that's missing. 20% that's missing.
Yeah, yeah, a big 20%.
A big 20%. How about another relative believed Te'o had to know? What is that? Yeah. It's like double double speculative, yeah. double hypothetical.
Yeah.
He had to have known, yeah. right?
My Uncle Slim said he had to know.
Okay. Like he didn't know.
So it's funny. At the time, I went back and looked Saturday night. I was a little concerned. Like, what did I write yeah. out of this? I didn't really remember. I was working for Yahoo then. And I read the column. It was okay. I said I believed Notre Dame's story. I found that their explanation believable. But at the time, yeah, the outpouring. I think people felt so burned to a degree by the story, you know, the whole thing. And it was kind of, it was a self-check for us in the media, too. It's like, oh, yeah, we all bought that. Well, we were stupid. So let's turn on Manti. He's an idiot. He's a sucker. Maybe he's a liar. I mean, the overreaction the other way to perhaps compensate for the media not doing its own job very well, I think was probably commensurate to part of the reaction to this.
Yeah, there was, I went back and looked too. So I covered the Notre Dame Michigan State game that was right after Lene's unfortunate leukemia, loss of the battle with leukemia, although apparently not.
Fake leukemia.
The fake was the non, I don't know. Yeah, the whatever happened when he thought he was dead. So I covered that game, and it was the story of the game. The broadcast is talking about, everyone's talking about this, you know, this poor kid loses his grandmother and his girlfriend the same day. And so he plays great. They win. Notre Dame was like, I wrote the part of the column was Manti, part was the Notre Dame. And they got the 3-0 and it's like, hey, this isn't too bad. Did not think there's, you know, this was not going to be a national title contender, but they end up getting there. So Manti after is we're out in the side of the like outside behind one of the end zones at Notre Dame. They had they used to do the interviews kind of out in the, we were out in the parking lot or like where the bus kind of would wait. They have a more elaborate facility now. And Manti was talking about it and this and that. And then I remember I talked to a bunch of his teammates and they were talking about, yeah, Manti said this. And Robbie Toma was there. He was a player who's in the documentary and he knew him from Hawaii. And Jack Swarbrick and Brian Kelly are talking about it. So I don't feel too bad about running. I mean, you're not going like, wait a minute, everyone here is saying there's a dead girlfriend. I need to check the death record, especially on deadline. So I do. I remember filing the story and, you know, it was like this kind of feel good story. And I do remember taking the elevator down at the after it's like 2 a.m. And I remember thinking I need to try to call that family in like a couple weeks as this dies down. Like, I mean, if your sister, your daughter, your anyone you know has a boyfriend and you could speak that nicely about them, you would want that. Like he could not have been nicer. He was talking about how great she was and how much she meant and all this different stuff. Like it was pretty incredible for a college kid to talk that. No, it's usually it's like, yeah, she's cool. You know, like we hung out a couple times. Instead, it's just over the top. He just has a very expansive way of talking and all this stuff. And of course, I forgot to do that. I wish I had tried to find them because maybe then I would have been like, wait a minute, there is no parents. But the story just took off and I did not write again about Manti again until the thing broke. So but when it broke, I too, and I don't know whether I think Jack Swarbrick, who's in the movie also, was he might have been calling around. Like he went strong for Manti. Like a lot of credit for an athletic director in the middle of that to defend a player at that level. Like he got up there and gave a press conference at a time when a lot of people are running from Manti Te'o. And he is the biggest, he is not, first off, it's like a punchline. And then he is like persona non grata because he's the cheat. He's the trick, you know, he conned us. Jack Swarbrick and Notre Dame were standing tall. And I think he was calling around. I don't know. But I remember my next couple columns, I very much thought Notre Dame's view of this was probably correct because I just trusted that as an institution was not going to go that far out on a limb if they knew it, right? If they knew what was up. So it was a very interesting story that, but it very quickly went to, you know, he's in on it. And then everyone going, you know, he was doing it to try to win the Heisman and he's this. And how couldn't he know about it? How could you be so naive? And the one thing I think that this documentary did, particularly in that first hour, in talking about Renea and Manti is they really showed who they were. And Manti, oldest of seven in a family in the Church of Latter-day Saints, and he's living on his island, and he's very isolated, very insular community, very naive guy. Chose Notre Dame over USC, where he actually wanted to go because he thought God spoke to him through a staffer at the, you know, at the offices, and, you know, got to South Bend and didn't seem to know it was going to be cold, and just a very, very ice, just a very trusting kid. When I thought, when I saw that, I can see more on how he got roped in to this whole thing and then leaned into the story that whole season as more and more people asked him about it.
Yeah, that was one of the best parts of the documentary, was showing who he was and how he grew up. And it does make it 100% more like, oh, I can see it. You know, I mean, because most of us, it's like, what, you quote unquote dated a girl for 3 years and you never saw her? It doesn't even make any sense. And then you get to know, okay, who is this kid and how was he, you know, raised and everything, and, you know, super dutiful, obedient, just put your head down and say yes, sir, to everything and do your best, you know, and that's who he was. And I think, you know, you saw a lot of times oldest kid, I was the youngest. I never listened to my parents. The oldest kid listens very well to the parents a lot of times. And I think that probably is kind of his whole thing. Listen to authority, trust what people tell you, do what you're supposed to do. That can be a really good trait, but it could also perhaps get you scammed epically.
I was struck, Dan, you kind of mentioned about like for a story reaching out to the fake girlfriend's family and everything. And that when I wasn't a national writer at the time, I remember covering Jackson State or something, or maybe Missouri. But I remember, you know, one of the big things, as we know, as journalists is, yeah, we like to call as many people as possible. We're writing like feature stories. And when I was watching the documentary, that's what struck me was, dang, I know there were writers who wrote features who probably tried to reach her or her family members. And for whatever reason, got a dead end, but didn't necessarily get she's fake, you know, but probably ran into like a dead end and just thought, you know, and I probably would have done the same, like, well, I'm not getting this interview, because that happens quite often when you, and they really made a big deal out of that on the show, on the documentary. And I get it. I thought it was convenient that they left in a lot of the stuff from Deadspin, or they left out a lot of the stuff that we talked about earlier, how Deadspin, you know, had a couple of lines in the story that ended up being inaccurate, suggesting that Manti was internet. But they included all the stuff about how just blasting the national media for not uncovering this themselves, specifically targeting ESPN for not finding this. And it's, I mean, they didn't find it either until they got the tip. So I don't know. I just I thought that was all interesting. But it did occur to me, like, man, I know writers probably tried to reach, like, I think SI had a cover story, you know, on Manti. And I know they probably try to reach the family. And once you get into it, you know, you get into a dead end. And I think we can all say, when we've been writing features and we've tried to reach out to girlfriends, families, or aunt and uncle, or whatever, and, you know, people sometimes just don't want to talk. And I think that's probably, I bet a lot of writers just assume that.
Yeah, I mean, former podcast member Pete Thamel wrote that cover story. That was a big part of the story, was Manti's, you know, dead grandmother, dead girlfriend. And I know Pete, like, tried to contact Stanford. That was part of the ruse. She was a student at Stanford or whatever, and find out information there, and was rebuffed, because it's a private institution. They don't have to tell you anything about any of their students. They don't confirm or deny. I think that was the roadblock there. I don't want to speak for Pete, but, you know, to your point, yes, I there were people that made efforts to flesh out the story and just didn't get it fleshed out. And maybe there should have been more efforts, maybe not. And then, you know, once that became the narrative, it just built and fed on itself all season long.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it was a failure to, there was no doubt it was a failure. It's also like, if you're like it said, like, there were people like Robbie Thoma's in the thing going, yeah, I heard her voice.
Yeah.
Like, when you have a guy being like, oh yeah, yeah, that's has been his girlfriend. I mean, it's just so bizarre that it's like, I get like, ha ha, the media got the story wrong. Yes, they did. We all did. I wrote about a dead girlfriend that did not exist. Whatever. Like, again, I'm not checking all this stuff on Deadline. Who cares? It was a feel-good story. There are no victims. Innocent people did not get harmed because Manti Te'o thought he had a girlfriend. I would posit that he did have a girlfriend. The girlfriend just happened to be male and was impersonating a female. He had a relationship with Renea, and he was being tricked into it. And he was told that Lanai is gone, and the emotion is exactly the same. He thought she died, and he did. It wasn't like there wasn't a girlfriend. Like, I have this girlfriend I talk to every night, but you actually don't. Oh, yeah, you should meet my girlfriend, right, back home, and there's no girl. He was talking. He did have an emotional relationship with this person. It was like at the same time. Now, did he like go in on some of the, well, you know, what's she like? Oh, yeah, we met and all that. Yes. And I kind of get, though, I mean, a lot of people like he leaned in. He did. And yes, and he should have been like, well, hold on. But if you're sitting there and you're getting interviewed for game day and they're got the cameras on, you're like, well, hold on. I didn't actually meet. Like, I get why he didn't correct it.
Right. Right.
You know, and it sort of snowballs. Like, it's like, eh.
Right. Well, at that one point where, like, Chris Fowler's interviewing him at the Heisman ceremony, and he was a finalist, and he was the runner-up.
His eyes were glazed over, like, oh, crap. Right. What do I say?
It was like, I just got to get through this answer, right? You know?
He wanted to, even after she came back to life, he still wanted, he wasn't, like, dumping her.
Let's just think about that sentence.
I know. I'm sorry. I apologize to any hardship I gave to Manti Te'o. The poor guy got killed. But there are some funny parts. I'm like, when she eluded the drug dealers and reemerged to life. The fake drug dealers in California. No, I mean,
this is like,
I don't know. The story, it's sad. It's a sad story, but my God. Where do we get this? Yeah. He still wanted to hang out with her, though.
Line meets... Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, well, he's like, that's when he goes back to his family for Christmas. He's like, I'm confused. Lene may actually be still alive. Right then and there. Oh, boy.
All right, I have something to reveal. Uh-oh. I was not catfished. I wouldn't call it that. I definitely had an online girlfriend, like 15, you know, 18 years ago. I was probably in junior high, so 20 years ago, I guess now. And, I now think back that she might not have been real.
Might not?
Really?
What? I don't know. I think back to like some of the pictures, some of the things she said, and I'm like, huh. So anyway.
So is this like, this was something like an AOL Instant Messenger thing or whatever?
Yes, it was like meeting the chat room, you know, and you message each other. I mean, yeah, it was weird. That was a weird time. That was a bizarre time of like online, you know, I was in like junior high-ish, early high school when all that was, you know, the internet was booming and the group AOL group chat, you know, late 90s, around 2000. And yeah, it was like the thing to do. Let's just sit in the chat room and see if I can meet somebody, you know, and you'd put your little 15 years old male. And then, you know, you put your height and your weight and,
yikes,
you know, all that good
yikes
stuff.
Yeah.
Dan's like, no.
Oh, yeah. Who knows who that was? Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay. Also,
Ross
California.
Dellinger
also
had his own Lene Kukua moment.
She claimed to live in California.
But it's a great state to be. Oh, it's a big state. Yeah. You don't know. People don't know a whole lot. It was like a couple weeks later at the Super Bowl. And someone asked Ray Lewis about it. And he's like, yeah, I've probably been catfished one or two times now that I think about it. Yeah. And he just laughs and he's like, whatever. This was the problem with the story. Okay. And he talked about crisis management, like his agent or somebody put him up to crisis management. Per usual, the crisis management was the worst advice you possibly could have.
Totally.
Absolutely terrible crisis management. So this kid, if Deadspin hadn't framed the story, you knew it and you did it to win the Heisman, because you could tell they had a lot of animosity, except felt like to Notre Dame. Like Notre Dame's this mythical thing, right? If you hadn't had that and you hadn't handled it the way they did with him hiding. He did an interview with Jeremy Schapp, but not on camera. Then this incredibly awkward, awful Katie Couric sit down with his parents sitting next to him, right? It reminded me, this is about the same time of the Tiger Woods. How did Tiger Woods handle his scandal? Manti needed to come out, stand in front of everyone and be like, listen, good looking girls, hit me up. I'm responding. Good. She calls. She to play those tapes right away. Sounded like a girl to me. Whatever. I never met her. I wanted to meet her. Look at, she's pretty. A lot of people hit me up. I'm an idiot. Not too good at love. Whatever. Laugh it all off and move on. Instead, it was taken deathly seriously. It's the same thing with Tiger. If Tiger had just come out and said, I am a horrible husband, like potentially one of the worst you will ever have. I never should have got married, but I'm going to be a good father going forward and I'm going to play some golf. We might not have years of like, remember we went to sex therapy and like all, you know, took all this time. It became like he did a serious press conference. He's in like a black suit. Yeah. Like
it was so bad.
His mom's sitting there. The crisis management. They are horrible. Don't hire a crisis manager. Hire a journalist who will go, that's a bad idea. I'm going to rip that thing apart. It was the worst way. They made Manti look guilty. He was so shell-shocked. And nobody wants to talk about whether you're gay or not with Katie Couric.
And your parents sitting next to you.
And he's like, also, from it.
Just a sign of the times, right? That would be a question asked on a national broadcast.
Yeah.
That would
be by America's sweetheart. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been like, look, man,
I was thinking, that was like years before Michael Sam, you know, and I think Michael Sam was a big paradigm shift because that happened. And everybody was basically like, oh, okay. You know, before that, oh man, you could not be a gay football player. No way.
Well, at that same Super Bowl, Chris Culliver of the 49ers said he didn't want any gays in his, wouldn't accept a gay teammate. I don't want, you know, and he had a couple of kind of, not kind of, slurs about gays, and he felt comfortable enough to say on a radio broadcast. Now, it became a big thing, and he had to apologize, but in the NFL and in college football, that was the prevailing wisdom, or at least believed to be the prevailing wisdom. You could not be gay in football then. Maybe you could be gay now. It's not easy. There's a couple people out. That's it. But back then, just 10 years ago or 9 years ago, it was completely. And so Manti now has to suffer through that as everyone's calling him gay. And it's like, how do you prove you're not gay?
I mean, he is married now and has a child. We know that. But why do you even have to deal with that?
Well, one of the big things I came away with is the sympathy. You feel for him. He was really, can't say the F word on here, I don't think, but he was mind effed, right? I mean, he was just mind effed. I mean, he was. And you come away with just this sympathy for this kid who was obviously gullible, somewhat sheltered, as you mentioned, you know, like literally on an island, you know, from an island and just kind of sheltered, gullible, and found somebody that he could talk to and share things with, who was just stringing him along the whole time. It just, it's like, I kept thinking throughout the whole thing, like, gosh, there are so many better ways to end this if you're Renaya. There's, cause she clearly wanted to end it several times. And then like the first time to make up the whole dead and you can hear her breathing. She obviously was fake breathing. I mean, that's like, what are we doing? Just like there's so many different ways to end it. Okay. Like, why would you fake breathing from a hospital bed? Just bizarre.
How about Manti as boyfriend of the year? Okay. Can you get a better dude than this?
Yeah.
He's getting no action.
Yeah.
Nothing. He's a college kid, an All-American, a huge star. He's getting no action, yet he will talk and communicate with this person at all days at nights, talk every night, support him. When they get in a car wreck, he would talk to their comatose self to try to get him to come out of the coma. They come out of the coma, girlfriend gets leukemia. I mean, this is kind of a downer of a girlfriend, right? Like, It's not exactly the most fun girlfriend. Never seen you. You get in a wreck. You got such bad luck. You now have leukemia. Sticks with them through that, trying to nurse her through leukemia while playing football at Notre Dame, and wants nothing more than for her to exist. This is a great boyfriend.
Mrs. Teo probably has herself a heck of a catch there. The real Mrs. Teo.
The real Mrs. Teo has got a great guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I took that and how I hadn't thought of how Renaya was able to really use the same religious Polynesian angles to talk to Manti in the world that he understood. I didn't realize how naive he was. I remember that night talking to him, and I think I talked to him one other time at a different game, his junior year. And he was very, you know, he's just got that. There's some of the guys are really immature. Like they're just, and you could tell it's about football for this guy, right? And so he's not worldly. He's not, they don't have money. People are like, why didn't he fly to California? He didn't have money either. You know, now you could. And just how, so then how insular that is and how Renaya was able to parlay off of that. And Renaya targeted a lot of athletes like that from the Polynesian community. And it worked. I mean, that's an amazing thing. It was not the first guy. And so crazy.
It's interesting. There's no, is there any like legal recourse here? I mean, this person probably, you know, cost Teo a lot of money. I don't know if there's a civil case. I guess there's not, because they would have probably mentioned it on the dock. If
how do you prove, though, you dropped in the draft? How do you prove it?
Yeah, right. It's hard. It is. Yeah. But boy, that documentary, if I was on a jury and watched that documentary, I don't know how much money Renaya has. But
certainly, but them being afraid that you're in on it and or gay were huge things for the NFL. The NFL was not going to. Yeah. I mean, he was a very, very good college football player. And I think you can make that case. Just your guys' thoughts on this. I thought they went way too easy on Renaya.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
You ruined this dude's life.
Almost made her sympathetic.
Yeah. To me, it was almost kind of like they were trading for access, all right?
Yeah.
You tell us everything, we'll go easy on you. Deadspin, you tell us everything, we'll leave out the problematic parts of the story. Yeah. They made this like there was no bad guy, really, and there really very clearly was.
Well,
they kind of painted it as two sympathetic figures when really, you know, should have been just one.
Yeah, and I even saw this quote from Manti that he after watching it, he understood what Deadspin was doing more. I don't think Manti ever read the original story. Because if he read the original story and saw that they were 80% sure he did it for publicity, he might think it differently. So very, very interesting documentary. If you haven't watched it, recommend it, of course. And if more comes out of it, we'll keep talking about Untold. Good college football doc. There aren't a ton of good ones. So this was definitely it. All right, let's football. It's week zero. We have some other things breaking quickly. Texas names Quinn Ewers their quarterback, starting quarterback. The ballyhooed recruit will start from day one. Not a huge surprise to anyone paying attention, was it, Ross?
No, not at all. But Quinn continues to be the most hyped quarterback who has taken less than three snaps in a college game that I can ever remember, ever. Chalk it up to the NIL recruiting era that we're in. But no, not a surprise that he won, and now he'll have the ability to prove himself, especially week two when the Tide roll into town.
Yeah, I think they were headed this way all along, and Sark even said early July at Big 12 Media Day, said we won't go as long into the process as we did last year to name our starter. And then it still went, I think, a little longer than some people thought. And people were getting very nervous, like, oh, my gosh, Ewers isn't as good as we thought. And Hudson Card's going to be our guy. Oh, no, we're doomed. Ewers is going to be the guy, for better or worse. We'll find out. And, yes, he's had a lot of hype. He's made a lot of money. He has yet to do a damn thing on a college football field. Doesn't mean he won't, but he's going to carry a lot of pressure with him to produce and produce immediately.
All right, leaving Texas on this, Michigan Wolverines. Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy still in a battle, even as the season approaches. In 2 weeks of the opener, Jim Harbaugh has not named a starter and says the competition is ongoing. McNamara was the primary starter last year, or maybe he started every game, and obviously had great success for Michigan. McCarthy's the former five-star, high four-star recruit with a ton of talent. Came in spurts. What do you think we're going to do here, Pat? Who's going to win out on this?
First of all, we won't know until like warm-ups before they play Colorado State, because you sure can't give a team as flush with talent as Colorado State any idea which quarterback they're going to be facing. So, because they're two different guys, this is what coaches do. It's like, you know, do we make them prepare for a more of a thrower or more of a runner? McNamara is more of the – or McCarthy, I'm sorry, is more of the running threat. McNamara is a little more of a pocket guy. My gut says – Harbaugh likes McCarthy a little bit better. He made sure he played him last year, even though McNamara did a very good job. And I think because he wants to keep J.J. McCarthy around, and I think he probably thinks he has the greater upside, or at least he did coming out of last season. I can't say that I've learned anything different since then. But my guess is it's going to be J.J. McCarthy, but neither of them would surprise me. And with a schedule that starts Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, Maryland, all at home, who the hell cares? Doesn't matter.
Could he play them both? Is he I don't know if they've done that before. Could he? And also, this dynamic is taking place at a lot of places where the top two quarterbacks in the running, one is more of the runner, one is the thrower, and what does this coach want to do? I mean, that's happening at LSU too. You know, you got the runner, Jane Daniels against
happening at Cincinnati as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, what kind of scheme do you want? Do you want to run the quarterback? A lot of people down in Baton Rouge think they will end up going with the runner, at least to start the season with Jaden. But it seems like that's a dynamic playing out at quite a bit of places. And I wonder if some of these places might, you know, the quarterback competition might extend into the season and you play them both.
Well, that was I think they're going to play them both. I think McCarthy's going to be the quarterback, but we'll see. In the long run. But as Pat said, you got a month to do it. Michigan, of course, is famous for the most awkward dual quarterback deal, where they would play Tom Brady and Drew Henson would each get a quarter in the first half to prove which one was best. And then at halftime, they would decide and go with the second half.
And they continually chose the wrong guy, right? I mean, didn't they choose Drew Henson quite often?
They chose him a lot, and then he blew the Michigan State game, and then Brady came in and almost saved it, and that was the end of that. But in hindsight, it was Brady.
Just barely, just a little bit.
I don't want to go Brady there. I was going to ask you, Ross, about the Nussmeier, Jaden Daniels. So Jaden Daniels comes over from Arizona State. Is the buzz on that, I mean, here's a guy you know is a proven commodity. Just seem like you bring him in as a transfer, would you not play him?
There's a possibility. Obviously, it was a three-man battle until recently. You know, Miles Brennan is stepping away, basically, it sounds like, retiring from football. He's the sixth-year guy who started in 2020, got hurt, was going to be the starter last year, got hurt right before the season, wearing flip-flops on a boat and tripped, I believe. Poor kid has had quite the luck. So that was a three-man battle with Brennan didn't have a whole lot of mobility, but had a huge arm, obviously, and was pretty accurate. And then Nussmeier, I think, is a blend of both, kind of that, you know, can move. He's mobile, also with a pretty good arm. They really like him. They thought he stood out really well in the spring. And then, of course, Jaden has that big time mobility to escape from the pocket. Jaden, I heard, didn't have the best spring. In fact, I think after spring, I think they indicated to Miles Brennan that, you know, he was kind of in the mix because Jaden kind of struggled somewhat through spring practice. I think that he's gotten better, and they do like the Nussmeier kid. And it seems like a really heated battle between the two. And that's one where maybe they do early in the season end up playing both of these guys, maybe, or if one struggles, you could see the other guy going in pretty quickly.
I mean, I'd love to see. I was looking forward to seeing Jaden Daniels, who I thought Max. I mean, they had some guys at Arizona State for him to throw to and stuff, but just to put him in that kind of a talent gap, I thought was going to be really interesting. So we will see. There's also Walker Howard, who's their five-star recruit.
But he apparently is not going to play much this year.
Yeah, they're going to redshirt him, I believe.
Quarterback derbies are going down all over the place.
Yeah, good one at Cincinnati. We'll see who starts. That'll be one. They're playing Arkansas first game, and it's either you're going with the thrower or the runner. They ain't saying either way until that day, I guarantee it.
Got to keep it quiet. Got to keep it. Hush, hush. We'll sort it out. We'll sort it out. Nebraska is playing Northwestern Saturday in Ireland. We'll discuss this later in the week. We make some picks. Obviously, huge game for both teams, but particularly Cornhusker coach Scott Frost, who has got to be in a make or break season here. He made news last week when he said the offensive line are working so hard they vomit 15 to 20 times per practice.
It's a messy practice field.
No, yeah, disgusting. No guts, no glory, Pat. No guts, no glory. He has come back to say he, quote, might have exaggerated, end quote. So I don't want to hear about Manti Te'o saying he saw his girlfriend or didn't. This guy doesn't even know how many people are puking.
And are any of them actually puking? Now, you see, believe nobody. Is Scott Frost a Renaya Tuiasosopo fabricator here or not? I don't know. But it was interesting. That came out of his radio talk show. And I looked at some of the other things that came out of that. Telling you what, Nebraska better look good when they open, because everybody's doing great. Everybody's doing so much better. This position, that player, this person. Scott Frost is not tiptoeing into this make or break season, which might be a miscalculation on his part, but we'll find out on Saturday when foot hits leather.
Pat last week made a grave error. We have two things to clear up, because I'll make my mistake too. I called Appalachian State Appalachian State.
Yep.
And the Appalachian people got mad. Now there is an Appalachian Mountains. That's how they pronounce it in all the northern part of the mountains. The range runs beyond just the south. Starts in the south, starts. I don't know where it starts. It just runs all the way. They got Appalachian or Lachian Mountains Alabama, in New Hampshire and Vermont and Maine and all that. Up there they call it the Appalachian, but down in the Carolinas they call it the Appalachian. And I called it the Appalachian. I'll give Appalachian State gets to call it whatever it wants because it's in Boone, North Carolina. So, forgive me, Father, I have sinned. I called the wrong Appalachian, whatever the stupid mountain. Pat also has a crime against the Catholics.
I do.
He said Notre Dame was a Jesuit school. I don't know whether Notre Dame got mad at that or the Jesuits got mad at that.
mostly the Church of the Holy Cross, which I believe administers Notre Dame.
Okay, yes.
Those folks and the Notre Dame people were unhappy with me because they did not want to be considered Jesuit. So I apologize for that, and I do so more sincerely than Dan Wetzel's Appalachian apology.
This is not a correction, but I think we should tell our readers, our listeners, what email I received last week about down from somebody in England about the Big Mac, the chicken Big Mac.
Oh, yeah. Remember? What did they say?
He said it was great. He said it was awesome. He said it was amazing. Amazing sandwich.
Said it was bloody unreal or
bloody
something.
Bloody unreal.
That's
I didn't
right.
Is that
so you
good
know
or
he's
bad?
From London. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We did have the call out to anyone who could get the chicken Big Mac,
yep.
Which is simply a Big Mac with the two beef patties gone and chicken in there.
Although, after the Lene Kukua thing, I think we should need some proof that this guy's really in England, you know, and has really had the Big Mac. He might just be in Philadelphia.
Half of this podcast comes from the Daily Mail, okay? So we are the Lene Kukua of podcasts.
If we're going to start fact-checking, we're in trouble.
We did a three-part segment on the Loch Ness Monster recently. That turned out to be like, what was that animal with the long neck?
It was an alpaca.
An alpaca, which I think I mispronounced it.
You did.
I appreciate everyone telling me all the words I mispronounced. Yeah. I know it. All right. Dr. Pepper, Fansville is back. They did not hire me, although I had a request. I could do a three-commercial arc involving the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban feud. I was not hired, so we'll see how good Fansville is this season, but it is back. They have hired Bryce Young, Alabama quarterback, to star in the Fansville commercials or make an appearance. But we already have the Madden curse kind of thing going 1 year in, because last year was D DJ Uiagalelei from Clemson, and he had a subpar season after getting in the Fansville commercial. So will Bryce Young break the Dr. Pepper / Madden curse? Ross?
I'll go yeah. Yeah. I'll go yeah. How about that?
It's like a real question. There were ESPN, I mean, they'd go, they had like Coors Light, cold hard facts. That was what they call it.
Yeah.
Cold hard facts. Yeah. Will the Packers win the NFC North? Like, that's not a freaking fact. That's an opinion.
Yeah.
They will. Okay.
I just look, Bryce Young's taking it on his shoulders there because, I mean, DJ Uiagalelei went from hot to not. I mean, he was not good last year, and I hope for his sake he has a better season, but we'll see if Bryce Young is dragged down by Brian Bosworth and all the other scrappers in those commercials. I am with Ross, and I am going to predict he is too good to be stopped by the Dr. Pepper curse.
He's got a better body of work than DJ. So I think we'll see, though. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, that was a risk last year. I remember hearing from Dr. Pepper, because all my NIL covers, they reach out to me to give me like the exclusive on the story. And I was thinking, man, this is this is risky on a kid that's really never he only started one game, right? In place of Trevor against Notre Dame.
Was
the Notre
Dame game? Maybe right? Two. Like, I mean, he played extensively in two games, might have only been one start.
Yeah. It's just I remember thinking how risky it was. This one not as risky, I'm sure. But also probably the price was is a little higher. I'm curious of what they're paying, because I'm sure they had to fork over a few more dollars.
Scandal at Oklahoma. A reader, this is on Reddit. A reader discovered the Sooners put out a photo of all of their national championships, real or imagined, they took a picture of like some trophy case, which is not a case anymore. Huge display inside the Barry Switzer Center. And in the Barry Switzer Center, they got them all lined up, but it includes both the 1974 AP and Coaches Championship. And in fact, the 1974 championship coaches poll went to USC.
Yeah.
So Oklahoma commissioned a $30,000 Waterfall Crystal Trophy to replicate a national championship they did not win.
Wow.
College football.
That's pretty brassy, you know? And you know why they didn't win that one? Why they only won, I think it was the UPI as opposed to both of them? Because they were on probation. They were 74 and 75, both they were on probation. I believe they won the half of the national title that they could win in both of those years, but somebody else won the other half. USC was definitely it in 74. I don't recall in 75, but that's classic.
This reminds me of Auburn, when Auburn went, the year Auburn went undefeated couldn't get in, didn't get into the BCS championship game. And they put in the media guide, People's Choice National
People's Championship. Champ.
Some magazine or something called People's Choice event. They had it in the media guide every year for, I don't know, 4, 6, 8 years until finally somebody wised up.
It's like, wow. Okay, now we won one for real in 2010. We can quit pretending we won the one in 2004.
Well, Alabama, the team that does not need to make up or pad his resume, has got all sorts of trophies. One year they lost three games, didn't they?
Yeah, two or three games a couple of years and claimed a title. Yeah,
that's outrageous.
They have about five or six, right, that probably they claim and shouldn't.
I think they claim the 1973 championship, even though they lost to Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. Like, you know, I mean, both teams undefeated, 1-1, 1 lost. Alabama still, now we're the champions.
It's the Lene Kukua of national championships. It's like Notre Dame claiming they won it without that year they got steamrolled by Alabama with Manti missing all the tackles. I don't know. Eagle eye, though. How about, I mean, you can't make a trophy. I mean, claiming that, well, some obscure place gave us declared us national champs, even though we shouldn't have, is one thing. Literally just making up a trophy when you didn't win. Like, it's 1974. Like, there was a tally. There was a newspaper coverage of this. Not good by OU there. Don't forget the incredible New York Times 2020 national champion.
The best. That was the best.
Really. UConn Huskies. UConn, the New York Times giving it to the UConn Huskies.
Randy for not Coach playing Huskies.
And thus not spreading COVID.
Yes. Amazing. I'm now looking up Alabama national championships. They claim 18, including the 1941 championship, in which they claim because they were named national champions by the Holgate system, whatever that is. That year, they lost two games to the worst teams in SEC, probably history of the SEC, my alma mater, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt. They lost to Vanderbilt and Mississippi State in 1941. National title.
And they're claiming national title. Awesome.
Hey. I don't believe any national championships pre-integration first.
Yeah.
That's a pretty fair line of demarcation.
Yeah, 1970 would be a good
year. Yeah. That the Walter Payton Jackson State teams were going to win. Okay. Those old Tennessee State Grambling, like 21 starters made the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think they might have beaten your squad, just guessing. But yeah, let's get it together. But Oklahoma taking it to the next level.
That is impressive. Yeah. That takes some real balls.
Something was sent to us often because we love Iowa. Some guy proposed to his girlfriend in front of the butter cow display at the Iowa State Fair. They have a cow made of butter and at the Iowa State Fair because, of course, they do. And I much respect for this guy who felt that would be the spot to pop the question, got down on one knee, proposed. She said yes. And only question I have is Hawkeye or Cyclone fan? What do you think?
I'm going Cy.
Yeah,
I'm going Cy because they're the bigger ag school. So I did a story last year or the year before, whenever, I don't know, on the Cy-Hawk rivalry and kind of like the demarcation of things. And yes, the Iowa people consider themselves more urbane and erudite and look down their noses at the dirty boot wearing ag folks at Iowa State. So
upscale Iowa.
This guy's on the clones. Yep.
Lace curtain Iowa. Ross, is he a Cyclone fan or a Hawkeye? He didn't make the butter cow. He could just have an appreciation for butter or great craftsmanship.
I have no idea, but I'll go with Pat on that one. I'll take his knowledge and judgment there.
All right. Iowa fan would go to Chicago. They'd go to Chicago and do it properly or something.
Yeah.
Big weekend away. All right. Well, we wish the couple all the best here from the College Football Inquirer.
We want to know, like, are they going to honeymoon someplace where they have, they should go to like India or something where they also revere cows?
They're like Mason City. There's a motel with a champagne glass jacuzzi.
And a cow figurine.
cow dipping. All right. Finally, I don't know quite what to say about this one. This was at a funeral, bringing funerals in. Quote, here's the story from SF Gate. That's the San Francisco Chronicle. This isn't even my Daily Mail. We've all been to funerals, you know, somber times, serious times, right? Remembrance. How about a massive brawl broke out between up to 20 family members during a funeral for an elderly woman on August 6th, leading to one injury, one arrest, and 20,000 in damage.
Oh, my goodness.
Police responded to the Rolling Hills Memorial Park at 1:30 after several reports of a chaotic altercation, end quote, between 8 to 20 family members who were reportedly armed.
Oh, gosh.
Sergeant Aaron Pomeroy said it was an incident of family drama started between a brother and a sister attending their mother's funeral who did not get along. Quote, it goes back many years, of course. The brother and sister were talking, got in an argument. Her boyfriend came over, encouraged her to walk away. The brother started beating on the boyfriend. That's when it escalated. It became a brawl, started to get calls. At one point, the brother got in the vehicle with the intention of driving over his sister.
Oh, my gosh.
The brother damaged grass, knocked over and damaged headstones, vases.
Oh, boy.
Broke a water main that ejected copious amounts of water and flooded the funeral plot. And finally, the driver reportedly knocked over the casket.
Oh,
oh no.
Oh, God.
But the good news, the quote, the body did not fall out.
That's a quote in the story?
Yeah.
Is this Daily Mail?
No,
or not?
San Francisco Chronicle. It's like a real paper. Lieutenant Matt Stonebreaker reports that the body did not fall out.
Oh,
the brother then got out of a car and a family member hit him in the head with a cane. That's how it
Somebody had this on video. Man, love to see that. Yeah.
You know, there's this like is the your old uncle with the cane. It finally comes through. It just whacks.
The worst California funeral since Lene Kukua's.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, come
there
on.
You go.
Holy moly. No body fell out of the casket because there was no body.
That's right.
What the hell, people? Do I got to scold you guys to kind of clean up your act? Can't be driving over your sister at the funeral of your mother. Yeah, knocking over headstones, causing water flooding into the... They just dug the plot and it fills up with water and then you knock over her... That mother would
be... The brother sounds like a problem.
The brother
sounds like a real problem.
There's two sides to every story, but SanFranciscoGate.com here seemed to only gotten one because the brother... He's arrested for felony assault with a deadly weapon and vandalism.
You're calling some other extended relative who wasn't at the funeral. Well, guess what Tommy did this time?
The cane is the deadly
Turned
weapon?
Turned the funeral into a brawl, cane? Ran over headstones.
No, the uncle that hit him with the cane, he's a hero. He subdued the wild brother who was knocking over caskets and headstones and trying to kill his sister.
Holy moly.
That is one hell of a funeral. Yeah. You know, normally you see someone dressed up like that. You're like, oh, what do y'all dress? Oh, I had to go to a funeral. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait till you load of this, man. It was not your.
Here's what happened.
This thing. Rolling Hills Memorial Park. There's a lot of action there. Rest in peace, everybody. Hopefully, we could get all of them to subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. Our ongoing push for the posthumous subscribers. Let's go.
Oh, man. All right. That's our pod. We'll be back Thursday or when? No, back Wednesday, maybe. Later this week, we're going to be back. We're going to make some picks. We're talking about the games this weekend. Actual college football.
It's coming.
We've been babbling on about virtually nothing for months and months now.
Realignment and not much else.
I congratulate us. It's not easy having a couple time a week podcast for a sport that only plays for like 4 months. But we did it, and you, the listener, stuck through with us.
Yeah, numbers are great. Thank you, everybody.
We didn't even lose any from last year. Yeah, like I figured people would stop listening when the games ended, but no, incredible. So thank you. It's going to get ramped up big time.
Let's go.
Week 0. Talk to you later.